All right, good evening, everyone, and welcome to our first installment ever of Yeshiva on the Road. Thank you for braving the frigid temperatures. I wish I could tell you that the end is in sight, but from what I hear, it's going to be a long haul here with this temperature, so we're in it together. Before we begin, I want to thank, of course, the Lobi family for hosting this event, to Billy and Sharon and Gabriel and Yoni, and of course, Racheli in absentia. Thank you so much. The idea for this concept of Yeshiva on the Road actually is over a year old. At one of our open houses 2 years ago, I remember there were a couple of families who were so impressed by the presentations that our Rebbeim and Morot made at the open house that they came to me afterwards and they said, "You got such an incredible staff. Why don't you like showcase them more?" So I filed that away in my memory of something I wanted to do. But just given, you know, the normal day-to-day routine of a principal, I never really got to it. And then again this year, the same thing happened. We had a great open house, and at the open house, people came to me and were talking about our incredible presentations and the Rebbeim and the Morot. So again, I said, I have to do something this year. But still, you know, the weeks after open house went by, and I wasn't able to get to it. And then David Schwartzman came back into my life. And it's just so wonderful to have David back. And David... thank you. And David is going to be, Mirza Shempi, starting Yeshiva University soon, but he had a few weeks at his disposal that he was able to come back and help out at Hank. And he asked what he can do to help. And I said, well, there's this program that I really wanted to launch for the past year and change. Maybe this is something that we can get off the ground. And to his credit, David took it and ran with it. So here we are tonight. Thank you so much, David, for all the work that you did already. And that you will continue to do. This is hopefully something that we're going to be bringing to other communities as well. Before I introduce the topic that Rabbi Selengut is going to be discussing, let me say a few words about Rabbi Selengut. My favorite story is how he ended up at Hank. I love telling the story. I was at a bar mitzvah in the Five Towns, and I knew I needed a Rebbe for the upcoming year. And so I saw Rabbi Kamenetsky, and I knew he was, you know, he was the principal of the Menahal of DRS, and I knew he knew a lot of people. So I said, do you know anyone out there who might be a good Rebbe? We're going to be looking this year. And I kid you not, literally, as we're speaking, Rabbi Selengut walks by, he points at him, he says, this is your man. I call him the next day, and the rest is history. So Baruch Hashem, you know, Hashem was, as always, looking down upon us and making sure that Hank is set for the future with an incredible Rebbe like Rabbi Selengut. And just to give you an idea of you know, what Rabbi Selengut brings to the school. Hey, Ruchi, how are you? So we just had a couple weeks ago, we had our girls' retreat. Every Friday night, we have this thing called Ask the Rebbe, Ask the Mora. Basically, around 25 or 30 girls gather around Rabbi Selengut and Mora Nathan, and any topic is in play. And I cannot tell you how impressive it is. Literally, no matter what they ask him, whether it's about Christianity, whether it's about science and the Torah, you name the topic, not only does he have the answer on the spot, but he has like encyclopedic knowledge of everything. Very, very impressive. And we're so fortunate to have him. Before I introduce Rabbi Selengut officially, let me also say that tonight's shir is sponsored Le'ilu Nishmat Tzvi Ben Chaim Baruch, that's Sharon's father, whose yard site is actually today. So may his neshama have an aliyah and reach the highest points of Gan Eden. Of course, welcome our president, Dr. Kushner, and our assistant principal, Ms. Zucker. Thank you so much for coming. The topic tonight is, don't friend me, just be my friend. Right? And, you know, as education continues to evolve, we have, you know, conferences that we go to as principals and educators, and different topics come up every now and then. You know, it used to be a lot about how you engage students, and davening was always like the topic that was always on all the principals' minds, and it still is. But a topic that has been coming up, literally, we just had a conference with all the tri-state area principals just around a month ago in New Jersey. And we had a list of five topics. The first one was about how to engage students in the digital age, given all the social media, the distractions, and the access that they have to certain things. And that was supposed to be the first of five topics. We spent an entire 4 hours just on this one topic. So Rabbi Selengut is here tonight to talk to us about, you know, how do we, in today's day and age, continue to inculcate Torah values in our students, given everything that's going on with social media. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce Rabbi Selengut.
Okay. Hello to everyone. So I also just really want to thank the Lovies very much again for opening their home. They always have their home open for anything to do with supporting Hank and the community, so it's very much appreciated. It's a great honor to be here again. And I want to thank also David Schwartzman for all the work he put in to making this possible, a very big thing. And we really, I'm very happy that it happens to be Mrs. Lovie's father's Yurtzei tonight, Tzvi Ben Chaim Baruch, so all the Torah should be Le'ili Nishmaso. And to all of you for coming out on one of the most frigid nights of the year to learn some Torah. So I remember when this whole digital age started. So I was in elementary school, and we all got screen names. Everyone remember that? Some of you remember it, some of you don't. AIM, A-I-M, right? Instant messaging. So we all had screens. And I remember we had one of our Rebbeim when I was in 7th grade, we had a Rebbe. We all loved. And he would talk to us about the fact that we shouldn't get so taken by it. And we shouldn't be so sucked in by everything that has to do with the internet. And we looked at him like, what's he talking about? Like, what's the big deal? So I remember he brought in for us a full page ad from the New York Times. And he hung it up. And when he showed it to us and explained it, I didn't understand then. But years later, I finally understood. What was the ad? So the ad was an ad for BMG, the music label. And on the ad, it was a full page ad in the Times, was a zoomed in picture of a guy's head from the back with headphones on. And it said in big letters, once you have them by the ears, their hearts and minds will follow. Once you have them by the ears, their hearts and minds will follow. So he said, this is what they want to do to you. So we didn't understand what it was then in 7th grade, but years later, and especially today when I watch my own students, I'm beginning to understand exactly what that's about. That was the beginning of the effect of the digital age, and today the social media on who people are and how they're becoming. And there's one specific story, a vignette that I want to share with you, that really will be able to capture the perspective we're going to take tonight in speaking about Divrei Torah and comparing it to what we see to understand the specific topic of relationships in this age. One of my first classes that I taught, not in Hank, when I was before I was in Hank, so we were discussing a comment that the Netziv makes on the Torah. So the Netziv speaks about the following. The Netziv talks about the fact that Yitzchak and Rivka had a very different relationship than Avraham and Sarah. So what happened to Avraham and Sarah? When they disagreed with each other, they had a fight, and they had conflict. And the Torah says that when Sarah didn't want Ishmael, she said, get that boy out of my house. And they were fought about things, and the Torah is very honest about it. Yitzchak and Rivka have a similar situation, in the sense that they have two sons that don't get along, but Rivka, her whole life, does not share anything with her husband Yitzchak. Unbelievable. Sarah shared it with Avram. Rivka doesn't share a thing with Yitzchak. Right? So the Netziv says, an incredible thing, the Netziv says that Yitzchak and Rivka did not have good communication. And Rivka was intimidated to tell her husband her whole life how she felt. So I shared this with the class. So one of the boys says to me, he says, Rabbi, if only Rivka had G-chat. So I was like, what are you talking about? So he said with the stream, he said, you know, when you have something that's uncomfortable to say to somebody, you don't say it in person. You do it on G-chat. Well, today G-chat is not, people don't use it anymore. You do it on G-chat. And then you press X when the conversation's done. They don't have to have the discomfort of having to face the person after having an uncomfortable conversation. And I remember this moment, and I remember like my stomach dropping, and I remember saying, oh my gosh, this is the new reality, right? So it's very, very, very clear that the digital age has had an incredible effect on our society and specifically on the relationships we have. So what I want to do is I want to talk to you about what the effect is based on studies that have been done and based on psychological research that has been done of the effects of the digital age on us and on our children and on our own relationships and on our relationships with our parents, and also to talk about how the Torah views a relationship and see if there's a way that we can bridge the gap between the two and understand how it is we today on a practical level and on a theoretical level should approach all this. So I want to just give you a few facts about social media. How many users do you think go on every day to Facebook? What do you think? How many? Give a number. Worldwide. About a billion, right? Billion users every single day go on to Facebook. How many Americans do you think have a social media account? What percentage? Any social media account?
50%.
81%. 81% of Americans, this is according to the Pew, a national study that was done by the Pew Institute, which is one of the most respected institutes of all these numbers, very recently, about 81%. between the ages of 18 and 29, it's over 90% have a social media profile, meaning everyone is totally involved in it. How many people you think, what percentage of Americans check their social media profile every single day? What do you think? 58%. 58% every single day of their lives, every single day of their lives are checking their social media profile, right? You think the usage of social media is higher with people who have more degrees, meaning college degrees, graduates, or lower? What would you say? Right, so everyone would say lower. It's the opposite. The more degrees you have, they found the Pew Institute, the more likely you are to be a user of social media. What do you think in salary, right? You think people who make between $20,000 and $50,000 a year use more, or people that make over $75,000, right? Much higher on people who have higher salaries. Right, so this is something that literally affects everybody. Everybody is affected by this. Sometimes you have issues or challenges or new phenomena that happen, and it affects like one group and not another group. This is an issue that affects literally everyone. Everyone's in the same boat about it. So the question really is for us, right? What effect does this have specifically on our relationships, and how are we supposed to deal with it? So the main area that we find this affect is in human interaction. Human interaction, right, is made up of two kinds of things. The verbal stuff, right, speaking with each other, and the nonverbal. So maybe someone could say, you know, that you in some way can have some kind of a verbal interaction using social media. But all the nonverbal things are changing, and studies are showing us now that there's something in the brain called white matter. White matter basically is the program behind everything that runs in your brain that tells you how to do things. So babies, right, when they learn to interact with their parents, and then children as they grow up, so how do they develop? They develop, they learn the nonverbal cues, right? You learn when someone has a face that looks like this, it means they're happy, or they're sad, or whatever it is. And studies are finding today that with the digital age, all that's changing. And the same ability to understand nonverbal cues is not present in children that are growing up totally with media. Right? Unbelievable thing. We literally are changing the way we develop based on this constant usage. Right? So this is the number one thing. We're going to have to see what the Torah says about this. Of how it is we're interacting. Literally, whole parts of human interaction are changing in our generation because of what we have. Conflict resolution, one of the most important parts of relationships. Right? What does the Torah say? The Torah tells us, in the recent parshios, when we're talking about Yosef and his brothers, says, Lo yachlu dabar l'shalom. They couldn't speak at all in peace. Very difficult pasuk to understand. So Rav Yonah Sinai Bishitz, who is one of the great commentaries on the Torah, explains, how do people learn to get along? Everyone has conflict. Every relationship has conflict. You speak about it. You talk about it. You're open about it. You share about it. So then Rav Yonah Sinai Bishitz says, L'yachlu dabar l'shalom, the brothers and Yosef never had the ability to discuss things. They had such enmity for each other. They had such difficulty speaking to each other that never at any time could they possibly resolve things by talking. So the Jonas Naib says that was the great thing. So conflict resolution becomes something that's very difficult. Studies show that teenagers especially are more likely than unlikely to block a friend of theirs on social media if they have a fight with them. And so what happens then? They're never going to talk to them again. So there's no conflict resolution, right? And the same thing happens, they find, with people who are married, right? So the whole concept, this second whole point, right, human interaction number one, second one, conflict resolution, is almost totally destroyed by constant obsession with social media, relieving stress. The Gemara says that when a person has stress, yasichena la'achirim, that you should discuss it with other people, right? You should discuss it with others so that you can learn to relieve it. And modern psychology has discovered, what's the best way to relieve stress? You talk to someone, right? That's why therapy is such a big business. You talk to someone in order to be able to relieve your stress. So what happens? Studies are showing that because people today are so not used to speaking about things, because they're constantly on their devices, the stress levels are much higher, meaning there's a direct correlation between the two. And they're finding especially that perhaps the much higher levels in teenagers specifically of stress, which are higher today than they were even, let's say, 10, 20 years ago, might be because of this digital age, that because of this lack of ability to just discuss what they're feeling, that yasichena la'achirim, that's creating all of these problems. Another point in relationships, hearing opposing views, right? One of the most important things in developing a relationship with someone, or developing as a person, or learning to get along with other people, is the ability to hear views that are different than your own. and learning to accept that other people think things that are different. What's the reason, right? There's two people that have a machlokus all the time in the Gemara, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Who do we paskin like? Beis Hillel, right? How can we paskin like Beis Hillel and not Beis Shammai? Why? Huh? It's easier?
Huh?
Oh, so the Gemara says, because whenever Beis Hillel would teach a halacha, they would quote Beis Shammai first. That's what the Gemara says. Why is that a reason, right? If I quote someone I don't like first, so does that mean I'm right? So the Maharal explains, when someone is confident in what they believe, they're able to see the other side also. So Beis Hillel was so confident in what they believe, they must have been more confident than Beis Shammai. The Maharal explains, because of their ability to quote Beis Shammai first. Right, so hearing opposing views is one of the most important things. What happens on social media? People learn their facts and learn what they want. You can today choose not to hear anything that's different than what you think already. You can choose to be in a group of friends or a group of peers that are totally the same as you are and think the same way, instead of having that diversity that allows a person to make a relationship. It's incredible. I want to share with you one thing. You know, Snapchat is one of the biggest things today. Snapchat was the biggest IPO in history, right? Snapchat, I think it went for, how much was it?
It was too much.
Unbelievable. It was literally the biggest IPO ever introduced on the market. How much was it, Yoni?
I don't know. Then it just dropped.
Well, then it just then dropped, right? But it was right. So what's Snapchat? What's the whole point of Snapchat? What's the chiddush with Snapchat?
It disappears.
Snapchat, you send a message, it disappears, right? You know, I should be in another business. You send a message and it disappears. And then these people make billions and billions of dollars from sending a message. So what's the whole point of it? How does it work? So there is an organization called Connect Safely, which is a group that's run by Silicon Valley people who talk about how to use social media responsibly. And they have a whole section where they explain what is attractive to human beings about Snapchat. You have to hear this. It's unbelievable. Snapchat mirrors real-life conversations. When you go to lunch with a friend, the conversation doesn't last beyond the meal. And Snapchat has managed to recreate that light, low-pressure feeling because snaps aren't on display anywhere forever. There isn't the reputation anxiety or image curation fatigue people feel in other services. Meaning, what did Snapchat do? Instead of having a regular conversation with someone where you talk, what's great about conversation? You talk with someone and that moment's never going to come back. You spoke, you had a conversation with, and you can never recreate that. You only have the memory. So Snapchat's that. I mean, there's no, you don't have to talk to people anymore. Right? You literally, you don't have to discuss anything with them because you can just do it over Snapchat. Right?
Deny you ever said.
And you can also deny whatever you ever said. Right, exactly. So the whole way this is even successful is by totally taking away the whole concept of communication. Right? So these are the facts of what is happening today in our world in the digital age. So the question is for us, is how do we deal with it? So there's one school of thought that can say, throw everything out, right? It's like stand in front of the horse, because stand in front of the car, I want a horse and buggy, right? Don't allow any progress and don't use anything and just say everything is forbidden. But that doesn't work, that's the only problem. Or you could say, right, everything is great and we should accept all the new advances and accept them completely and do whatever the makers of these things say that we should do. So the Jewish way is always in the middle, right? Where we find that Avram Avinu, right, when he spoke to the Bnei Ches, he said, "Ger v'toshav anochi imachem." I am a stranger and I am a resident among you. That's the balance of the Jew. On the one hand, we take things in, right? We're a resident of where we are. But on the other hand, we remember we're always a ger. We're always somebody who's a little bit alien to the society around us. And there's that middle road that's so hard that the Jewish community always has to find. And why is that important? Because we can't just trust that ourselves or our kids are going to naturally learn how to do it. Right? When Avram also, when he speaks where he was living to the king, he says, "Raki ein yiras Hashem b'makom hazeh." There's no fear, everything's great, but there's no fear of God in this place. So the Malbim explains, Avram acknowledged where he was, there were many good things, and the people were good people. But when a society is not based on Yirah Shamayim, on fear of heaven, and on having a concept of being, of having Torah values, it's impossible to say that you can just accept everything about it and not worry at all. So the question is, how does one make that divide, right? How does one bridge that gap to be able to use these things, to have live in the world of the digital age that we can't escape from, but still maintain those relationships that are so important to us and overcome all these stats that we shouldn't just become another number? So to do that, we have to first learn what is a Torah relationship about, right? So let me ask you a question. What does bitachon mean? What does the word bitachon mean?
Security.
Right. Security. It means secure belief. What is the bitachon? Bitachon means I'm not going to worry about something happening because I feel secure that God will help me. Meaning, I have a good relationship with God. Where is the source in the Torah that a person is supposed to have bitachon? Literally, the most important part of one's relationship with Hashem is bitachon. Where is the source in the Torah? Does it say it anywhere in the Torah? This is literally one of the biggest questions of the commentators. There is literally not one source in the Torah. Where is the source of bitachon? Right? You think Hashem talks about I exist. Where is bitachon? So the Meshech Chachma has a famous piece where he writes, the source of bitachon is the pasuk Uvo Sidbak. And you shall stick, and you shall cleave to him. So the Meshech Chachma says, what happens? When a person cleaves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when they live their life and bring Hashem in, it's like any other relationship. You learn to be connected to somebody. Connection doesn't just happen. It takes effort. So when a person brings God into their life, Uvo Sidbak, they cleave to him, they stick to him, they watch how he helps them throughout their life, so then they learn to be connected to him. The essence, the Meshech Chachma writes, of the relationship with Hashem that creates a healthy one of the bitachon is connection. Right? Forming connection with God. And that is the definition of the Torah relationship, is connection. People being connected to each other. Families being connected strongly. Having a real sense of connection with another human being, not with things. People sometimes get very connected with things and with belongings and with ideas, which are also important, but they forget about the connection with other human beings that defines them. We find this all over. When Adam and Chava, the first couple, the first relationship, what is the culmination of their relationship? V'hayu l'basar echad, and they became like one. Right? They weren't literally one. They were at the beginning, but at this point they weren't. The connection, the Mefarshim explained, the physical and emotional connection is what defines marriage and what defines all relationships. And that's why under the chuppah, when we give a bracha to the chassan and kala, what do we say? We say, Sameach tesamach, Reim ahuvim, rejoice, beloved ones, Kesameichecha yitzircha began Eden mikedem. As your creator made you rejoice in Gan Eden before. So what does that mean? Kesameichecha yitzircha began Eden mikedem. So there is a sefer written by someone, the Hafla. The Hafla was one of the great Hasidic masters, was the rabbi of Frankfurt in the early 1800s. So he writes in his commentary to the Gemara on that brach, and he says as follows. He says, what was the simcha of Adam and Chava? For Adam and Chava it was easy. Two people get married, they're strangers, they don't know each other. You know each two someone for a year is even, right? You don't really know each other. And you have to learn to become one unit. Adam and Chava was easy. Why? They were one before. They were not two people. Originally, when Hashem created Adam and Chava, they were literally one body. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated them and then they came together, so what is it? At that point, they had to learn once more to be again as one. And that was a great simcha for them, and it was easy because they knew what it meant to be one. So the Hafla says, under the chuppah, we give the bracha to the chassan and kala, may you witness the same joy that you learn to become one like Adam and Chava before, who really were one. That you learn to connect with each other in that way. Right? Because connection, having a real strong emotional connection is what defines all relationships. That's what we find in the relationship the Torah says with parents and children also. We say every day in Shema, v'shinantam l'vanecha v'dibarta bam, and you shall teach your children v'dibarta bam. What does that mean? How do you translate those words? Huh? You tell them, right? Text them. What'd you say?
Talk to them.
And you shall... So bum seems to be saying you shall talk about them. Meaning the Divrei Torah, the words of Torah. V'shinantam l'vanecha, teach a Torah to your children. V'dibarta bum, and you shall talk about the Torah. But the problem is bum doesn't really mean about them. Bum means in them. Ba, bahem, right? In them. So if Shimshon Rafal Hirsch writes there, what's the Torah saying? V'dibarta bum. When you speak to your children... V'dibarta bam, speak into them. Speak into their heart. Connect with them. Make sure that when you speak, it's not just you're like a teacher who's teaching material in class. You're connecting spiritually with them, emotionally with them. Because connection, again, connection is what defines a total relationship. So this is the number one, this is the challenge, right? Here's where the balance comes in. This is the challenge. The challenge is learning, on the one hand, to have this Torah-based connection, which is what defines all relationships in the world, according to the Torah. And on the other hand, live in this world that seems to so push away any form of connection. So, again, the answer to this comes from the Torah. It's very clear. The Torah gives us all the answers to life's problems. The Torah gives us in many places answers to this question, how it is we can bridge this gap and learn to, on the one hand, balance the digital age and be able to maintain that connection. So the first step, right, and one of the Torah's lessons of how you maintain a relationship is tznius. So it's tznius, modesty. What is that? Why is there, what is tznius? Right, people talk a lot about clothing, but you should know, when the Torah speaks, says the word tznius, it's not in a context of clothing. V'hatznei alechas, you should walk in a modest way. Right, so what does it mean, tznius? So the Rabbeinu Bechaya explains what is the purpose of tznius. Modesty teaches a person that they shouldn't focus so much on themselves. When a person lives in a modest fashion, conducts themselves in a modest way, is not focused on being the center of attention, they learn not to take themselves so seriously and focus on themselves. So the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, what do they learn then also? Not to focus on others. If I'm not focused on myself so much, I don't have to focus on what others are doing either. A person learns to be more independent. That's what it means in Pirkei Avos when we say, Al tistakel bakankan, el b'mashiyeshbo. Don't look at the jug, at the holder, look at what's in it. Meaning, a Jew is not supposed to look on the outside so much. So this message can help us immensely. Why? Because when we live in the digital age, what is one of the things the digital age teaches us? It teaches us not to be connected, because it teaches us constantly to look on the outside. Constantly look outside, look at other things, right? Like the guy with the headphones, once you have them by the ears. And not to focus on what really matters. So by remembering this concept of tznius, right? A simple thing like that. Of not focusing so much on how we're presenting ourselves as the end-all be-all, and therefore not being so focused on what other people are posting on their Instagram and other people are doing, right? That can help us immensely to maintain the connection we have inside and focus on the inside also. Living in the moment, right? That's another big one. The Torah tells us very clearly that one of the solutions to this problem is, instead of living in the digital world, which constantly makes us live not where we are now, because we're looking at our phone, and we're looking at our LinkedIn, and we're looking at our Instagram, it teaches us to live where we are. Where do we see that? Every single Shabbos we say, V'atem adavikim b'ashem elokeichem, you cleave to God, chayim kuchem, hayom, today. So this, the Hasidish Sfarim say, a Jew lives hayom, they live today. There's a great video on YouTube of Bibi Netanyahu meeting with a number of Israeli teenagers, and they're like so excited, all taking out their phones. It's at a table. It's like a special meeting for like graduates of I don't know if it was, you know, got some award. All taking out pictures and taking pictures of him. So he finally says, the gravity, he says, Atem mitzdalmim mitzdalmim mitzdalmim. You're taking photos, and all you do is take photographs, you kids. So one of the kids says, Rosh HaMemshala, Prime Minister, Im lo hitzdalamta lo chayita. If you don't take a picture, it's like you didn't live it. So Bibi looks at them and he says, Ah, ani chayiti v'ani lo hitzalamti. I've lived and I didn't take pictures, right? So this is literally like the vignette that captures what this concept is of hayom. We literally get lost, not in the moment. We forget to live where we are now. It's incredible. There is a there was a whole book written about a project that was done in the Boston Consulting Group, which is one of like the big corporate firms that consults with the biggest organizations in the world. All the big people work. Bibi Netanyahu worked there, actually. Mitt Romney worked there. I think half the presidents of in the modern era all worked in the Boston Consulting Group. It's like a place of kingmakers. So when smartphones started coming out, what they noticed? The creativity levels were going down, and the effectiveness of their groups, their consulting groups, were going down. So the people on top decided the following. They said, our people who we hire are like the most creative, best minds. We're going to mandate hours of disconnect, where they have to turn off their phones, and they're not allowed to connect to their email, and they'll check if they went on their business email, and they're not allowed to be and they have to just be with themselves. And they tried this. There was a whole book written about this study, very fascinating book. It was a New York Times bestseller. So they found when they did this after a few months, the creativity levels shot up, right? The effectiveness again shot back up. What they find? When people don't live in the moment, right, and they're constantly looking at what's happening, what's going to happen, what happened, they forget to be themselves and they're not even effective anymore. So the Torah tells us, Hayom, what's one of the ways to bridge this gap between having connection and having to live in the digital age? To remember sometimes not to be connected to those things and to reconnect with ourselves and what we're able to do. I remember when I learned this concept of a real moment. So when I was a number of years ago, I was at a wedding in Williamsburg. Some of my kids, did I ever tell a story in class? The Williams? No, I don't know. So I was at a wedding in Williamsburg, and the BQE, the way back, was closed. So I had to take the highway. I had to take the side streets. So this is before that one. This is before the days of GPS. Right? So I'm driving around like midnight in the middle of Williamsburg, and I'm just making turns, and I didn't realize I made three turns behind the same Cadillac Escalade in the middle of Brooklyn. Never a good idea. So I guess he thought I was following me, that I was following him, so I get down this small street, he swerves, blocks the road, jumps out of the front door with a gun. So I'm this like little Jewish man in a Camry, you know, sitting there, and this guy starts charging me with a gun. I was like, oh my gosh. So I thought in my head, if I go forward, it's not going to be good. It ended up okay, I'm here, don't worry. So if I go forward, it's not good. So I said, I'll go backwards, back to the intersection, I'll zoom into the intersection, a car will hit me, and then he'll go away. That was my thought. So I put my car in reverse, start gunning backwards, and I get towards the intersection, and I look back, and I see he's still running at me, and I brake, and I brace myself for the impact. There's nothing. I look up, and the light was red both ways. You know that one moment, right? Light was red both ways. I promise this happened. So I turn my car that way, and I go, and I ended up somehow getting home. I don't know how. So someone said to me, why didn't you call the police? I said, to tell them there's a guy with a gun in Brooklyn. So the next day I went to see Rav Avram Shor. He's a rabbi I greatly admire. So I told him what happened, and he said the following. I said, what should I do now? So he said the following to me. He said, every time in the Beis HaMikdash they used to, when there was a miracle, they brought a korban todah, a Thanksgiving sacrifice, right? So what was the Thanksgiving sacrifice? The Thanksgiving sacrifice was a sacrifice that was brought with two things, chametz and matzah. It was cakes that were made of chametz, like a regular bread, and cakes that were matzah, like Pesach matzah. So why did they bring with chametz and matzah? So the Sfas Emes explains, because chametz is regular, that's teva, that's nature. Matzah is lamala min teva, it's above nature, that's like a miracle. And every single miracle has parts of it that are miraculous and parts that are natural. So he said to me, that's like your miracle. Your miracle has the chametz and the matzah. There's parts of it that are whatever, and there's parts of it that are like super duper amazingly miraculous. So Rav Shor said to me, every single day you should give one rega, one moment, to think about God's kindness to you and how he saved you. He says, how do I know that? Because chametz and matzah, there's the same gematria when you add them together as the word rega, moment. Right? He said, if you give that one moment, that'll be your korban todah every single day. So, right, and I still try to do that till this day. Take one moment, a person takes one moment, what they can do in one specific moment. And social media and the digital age, as much as it gives us benefits, it makes us more effective in many ways, it in a way makes us less effective when we forget to take those moments to just live where we are, put our phones down, let our blood pressure go down, right? We don't have to feel if it's vibrating. There's a study that just came out this year that the average American touches their phone 2,500 times, one of their devices a day. Unbelievable! It's like, you can't even imagine that, right? It's like, right. So to have those moments where we don't have to do that. Another very important, right? Another extremely important one, and this is perhaps the most important for our generation, and that is the concept of comparing ourselves. One of the greatest negatives that the digital age has made, and what causes us not to be connected, doesn't let us bridge that gap, is when we compare ourselves to others. And how many people go on social media or do? And they look at their family. Look how happy they are, right? Look at kids. Look how well those kids sit. My kids, so the kids were like killing each other 2 seconds before the picture. But look how nicely they sit, and they're dressed so nicely. And my, right, so this happens all the time. Look how happy that couple is. Where's my hat, right? How often does this happen? And all these, there's a million studies that show this, what this does. So this is really one of the greatest damages in connection that this does. The Torah has one message about this that a Chazal repeat over and over again. Ezehu Ashir, who is truly rich, Hasameach Bechelko, someone who is satisfied with it. What does it mean, satisfied? It doesn't mean b'di'eved, just, whatever, I have to deal with it. It means you have joy. This is wonderful. This is what I'm meant to have, right? That's the whole, because what's special about a relationship is not something that is posted on Instagram. It cannot be posted. What makes the magic of being connected to another individual in your family or a friend is those things that are unsaid, is the nonverbal stuff, is the stuff that you cannot see. That's why Chazal tell us, Lo nichrasa habris, the covenant between Hashem and the Jewish people was not made, Ela al devarim shebal peh, except for the things that were in the verbal tradition. Meaning, what makes our relationship with Hashem special? Not the Chumash. It's the Torah shebal peh. It's the unsaid thing. It's the things that we pass down. It's the things you can't even show anything for, right? That is the most important, that's an incredibly important point. And that's something that people forget to be happy with those stuff. I remember when, you know, one of the, I told the story last year in when I spoke in West Hempstead, but this is the best Sameach B'Chelko story, so it has to be told again. So after Hurricane Sandy in Bell Harbor, that was, you know, Bell Harbor got rocked in Hurricane Sandy. We're very good now. Everything's great. But we got the bay and the beach met in the middle. Everyone got flooded. It was absolute catastrophe. So during the month or so that people were not able to live in their houses there, the city didn't have electricity to be put on. So we made like a shelter where people would come during the day from their houses. They could have coffee or whatever, and they'd have to leave by nightfall because there was no lights or electricity anywhere in the neighborhood. So in the shelter, people would come in and they looked terrible. Everyone's coming from ripping out their walls and throwing out all their pictures and all their belongings. So there's this one guy that came in every day, and he was happy. And he would joke. And no, he didn't look like a Jew to me. Random people were coming in. And he was kibitzing. So one day I went over and I said, let me ask you a question. I saw your house down the block. How are you happy? The entire house got destroyed. So the guy takes off the snow cap that he wore every single day, this dirty snow cap, every single day he had on. And he had two yarmulkes on. And he said to me, Rabbi, this yarmulke is from one son's bar mitzvah. This yarmulke is from the other son's bar mitzvah. As long as I have these on my head, I know everything's going to be okay. So he said to me, right? So that's Sameach B'Chelko, right? We forget about the dirty snow cap sometimes, right? We forget that what makes our lives special, right, are sometimes the things we overlook. And social media causes our connections with others to be broken because we forget to connect them, because we think it's not worthwhile, because we forget to be so satisfied and happy and take joy in what we have. So these points are the points that are so important to remember. The Torah tells us to maintain connections. This is what makes our ability to bridge that gap, to live in the digital age, but not to have to do this. So just a few practical points based off this, right? Number one, engaging in conversation every single day. That can help us overcome that lack of connection. Remember that we should reconnect with those that are around us. To be connected to ourselves. Remember to connect, take those moments to connect to ourselves where we put down our phone, even like for 25 seconds, right? Literally 25 seconds, how much good that could do to be able to remember we're a real person, and we need to be connected with ourselves to be functional, right? To remember to be ourselves, not to try to be somebody else. That our pictures that we have that are not on Instagram, that are in our head, our memories, and the good feelings that we have, that those are just as special and everything else. To live in the moment, to remember when things are happening, to just look and see that there might be something special happening we might miss if we don't look for it. To remember, just mainly, to go back to the basics, right? To go back to the concept that even if we live in a digital age, and even if we have to be connected to these things, we still can live, sometimes, like a basic person before. And when can we do that? On Shabbos, right? We have a great opportunity to do that. There's nothing wrong with also sometimes living in a non-digital world, even if 90% of the time we're digital. That 10%, that little amount of time, that makes it special. When Rav Amital, who was the Rosh Shiva of Gush, sent a number of his students when they got called up during the Yom Kippur War, when the fighting was still going on, they were going to be in Pesach in the field, and they felt terrible. They weren't going to be at a real seder. So Rav Amital said to them, the 5 minutes you have when you're on guard duty to make a quick seder, those are the 5 minutes that define you. Not the other 23 hours and 55 minutes of the day. It's the 5 minutes you're at the Seder, right? Taking those moments, right? Taking those times where we disconnect and having those be what define us, that'll allow us to survive the digital age. That'll let us do all these things that we spoke about, not comparing, to remember to be ourselves, to live in the moment, to be able to maintain those connections. So I really hope that we could take some of these things, put them into practice, to be able to remember that even if we live in difficult times, it doesn't mean that things have to be difficult, and that we can learn to use them and even become better people as a result, and to work on ourselves and help our children, our own families, and parents, and children can help their parents, and parents can help their children. Everyone can do it together and make stronger relationships than even were before. I thank you very much for the opportunity.